Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hello and welcome to the Home Medicine Podcast. My name's Phil. Joining me as usual, we've got Rohan. Hey, Rohan, how are you doing?
Hey, Phil. Good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. As usual, this episode of the Home Medicine Podcast is sponsored by Home Medicine Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the ESP Home projects. Configuration is done via the user interface, so no fiddling with the router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. First Wednesday of the month, which means it is a new release day, 2024.6. Happy halfway of the year.
That's right.
And a pretty big release coming out this one. Well, there's some cool features that are coming out. I think ones that we've sort of have discussed about coming pretty soon, or we've sort of, you know, been spitballing around. I know you and Rohan have been talking about this for ages, right? But the big feature to come out of this release is going to be LLM conversations can now control your house. So if you have an OpenAI or a Google AI integration allowing you to converse or cook up your instance and converse with those APIs, they can now control your house. Previously, they were just, you know, a pretty advanced, you know, Google search, right? You would say, you know, basically having a ChatGPT saying, hey, I want to give me the answer to this. Now, ChatGPT or OpenAI can actually take action on your home entities. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can now say, open the light, or what is the temperature upstairs, and all that fun stuff. I think we've known this is coming for a while. I think we've talked about it before on the podcast, but I remember there was a YouTube video you showed me of someone else actually had given ChatGPT control of their home assistant instance just as an experiment, right? Like, he was like, I'm not going to do any automations. I want ChatGPT to just control my house and try and do its best. And yeah, it was crazy.
And it was okay. Right. I think was the, like, it worked, but it wasn't perfect. Yeah. Again, it's still like things like context and stuff were really nice, because it's like, hey, you know, this assist command came from this, whatever, this area or something like that. Right. Or you can say something like, hey, you know, I typed in, like, turn on the light, and it recognized that my phone was actually in the living room, so turn on the living room light, right? Like, so there's some stuff there, but then, you know, I might turn around and say, okay, you know what? I'm actually going to turn on the office light. Why? Because.
Yeah. Yep.
The problem with some of those things is there's no, like, debug, and there's no any of that, right? And if there was, honestly, like, I'm not an AI engineer by any means, so even if there was a debug, I don't know how much of that I'd get. Yeah. There is a little bit of a restriction here, though, that we didn't talk about, which is with Ollama. I think there's some restrictions in Ollama which won't allow for this just yet. Hopefully that's something that where I'm not sure if that's on the Ollama side or on the Home Assistant side, where that can, we can get over that hurdle. But yeah, it is pretty cool. I think it's pretty neat. I just don't know what the costs will be like, right? Because again, you're basically sending all of your Home Assistant entities with all of their states and all of their attributes and blah, 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 and saying, hey, here's everything. Now turn on the living room light. Yep. Right? Because it doesn't know what the living room light entity is or anything like that. So you have to send it all the stuff. I know on the Google AI side, the API actually allows for some tweaking and stuff. So if you look in the, if you do have Google's AI, which whose name currently escapes Gemini. Me for some reason, Gemini, thank you. If you're looking at Gemini, and if you look at it in the Home Assistant integration, there's actually a bunch of like check boxes that you can like. So when you say, hey, you know, I think it's called like advanced mode or some of that. Mm. I don't remember what it's called, but there's a checkbox there underneath the prompt. First of all, the prompt has been optimized by the Home Assistant team just to say, hey, this is what we think actually worked the best in our testing. And then below that, it's like, hey, we want to restrict, you know, swear words and stuff like that too, right? So those are options that Google allows. And yep. Home Assistant's actually are automatically in the release has actually gone in and said, this is actually what's going to, what we think works best. So we're just going to set those settings. If you want to tweak that, you're totally able to. But in their testing, that's actually what happened, which, and funnily enough, Paulus was mentioning that when they tested it, if they fully restrict like swear words and stuff, it actually doesn't work. It breaks something. So I don't know what it is. So they had to put it in like the medium, like restricted, like,
wow. I don't know. Interesting.
I don't know what those restriction level means. It's like, hey, say this word. You're allowed to say this word, but not that word. I don't know. But something, there's some overlap with swear words and home automation. So, and I'm just curious what that is. So, so that's, I don't know. It's kind of cool.
So I guess as a bit of background on, and this is something that because I haven't used OpenAI or any of these LLMs in my own instance yet, right? Like just the cost, right? Yeah. I think it's just another subscription I don't want to have to pay for at the moment. But I think what you were just talking about offline, Raham, was that what I found interesting was that, yes, these LLMs, like, yes, they are very powerful, but at the end of the day, they don't have access to your Home Assistant instance. They don't know the state of your home. They don't know your home. So every time you need to make a request or every time you're sending a command to, you know, OpenAI, ChatGPT, Gemini, Home Assistant has to send all of your states over to that model for it to then get enough context of what's actually happening in the home. So, yeah, I don't know.
And every time, AIs. Right? Like,
yeah, every time, right? Like, so just thinking the data, oh, yes, it's text, it's probably, you know, bytes, right? Like, we're not talking huge amounts of data, but I don't know in terms of like processing time, if someone's got like just one entity in their home compared to someone that's got, you know, over 200 entities and all disabled, and, you know, just imagine like I've got Z-Wave devices, you know, how many entities are they bringing in like per device? Mm-hmm. Does that mean Home Assistant has to send over, you know, like 1,000 entities? On every time I'm calling ChatGPT, and does then ChatGPT take a while to process all that?
Yeah, I think there's some stuff you can do to restrict or filter down what you expose.
Yeah,
but it's still a decent amount, right? Even just my usable entities, there's probably a decent amount in there, right? Like, and we were actually talking about this on the in the creators call this week, and like there's integrations there that, you know, they provide a ton of functionality by exposing a ton of entities, and I might use one, right? Like for my car, I use the HVAC component. I never use Home Assistant to unlock my door or open my trunk or do any of those kind of things. And I think I have like, I don't know, like 50 entities that is created, right? Which is awesome for people that do use that, right? And
or you want a dashboard or something like that.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like in my head, I'm like, I want those entities because if I ever want to do anything with it, I can.
Yep.
But I literally use one, and that's the HVAC, right? Heat and cool. Maybe the seat heaters, but even that, like my car is warm enough. I don't care, right? So I don't know. That's it's a tricky one, right? So you have to do that every time. And that's where stuff like Olama becomes interesting because now it's you're hosting it yourself, right? Yeah. It's hitting your GPU, it's hitting your laptop or machine, whatever device you have that's running that service, and it's hitting your model. So now it's not a, you know, you're not paying per token or paying per whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot more expensive upfront, but probably a lot cheaper down the road. But again, and like we said, there's not, Olama's not part of this where it can control it just yet. So you can talk to it and it can reason and it can give you all of that stuff, but it can't turn on the light or turn off the light or whatever. Right. It can tell you what the temperature in a room is maybe, but it can't do that part where it has to send a control back. Right.
Yep. Well, I'm sure that will be coming soon, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Yeah, hopefully. And speaking of Assist and some of those kind of things, Assist now has media player intents as well. So basically what that means is if there's media players that are in the same area as Assist in the same room, it can just play, pause, resume, set the volume and all that kind of stuff, right? So it's a lot more natural to be like, hey, play music or whatever, right? Yeah. Like it's and it'll just keep going. So similar to how Amazon Echoes and I think Google Homes do that too, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, similar to how those work. It's kind of cool.
I was just about to say, like, this is one of my things I love about the Amazon Echo is like those groupings, right? Just being able to group the lights or group the media players into a room and then just, you know, having natural, like, turn off the lights, turn on the lights. It's like, yeah, it's magical. So yeah, it's good to see that Assist is taking that on board too. So we have the new sections layout for dashboards, and that has a new feature, which is a conditional display. So you can now choose, you know, should this be displayed on mobile? Should it be displayed on desktops? Maybe if someone's at home or if the kitchen lights are on or whatever, like whatever states there are, those sections or those, you know, cards that you've got on that dashboard can now be conditionally displayed, which should also be available in other dashboard types, but is now specifically available in sections.
Yeah. And which is, so it's similar to kind of like what I want to say it's bubble card and stuff does, right? Where it's like, and then the cool thing here too is you can actually even start adding in, like saying, like with the conditions, you can go in and start saying, hey, you know, I want to do it if my screen size is this much, right? So show it if it's if I'm on my phone, but not on my tablet or something like that. Or you can do whatever else in terms of like conditionals. Hey, you know, my AC is running, then give me the HVAC card or whatever that is, right? The climate card.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I don't know, I think it's kind of cool, but yeah, definitely handy. And I like the work on this, that UI, right? In the section side. All right. Where are we? Backgrounds. So now in your dashboard, you can set a background image for that. And you could do this before, but you needed to edit the YAML. You need to upload a file into your www folder, map it properly. Because, of course, Home Assistant doesn't, you can't just do www. It has to be like /local/whatever. So now you don't actually need to do that. There's actually a little upload button and you can just click on the upload button and upload the image, which to me makes sense. I don't know why this wasn't here forever ago, but it's here now, right? I personally hate having to upload it separately and then map it and then bring it into the UI and then map it there. Yep. And it's too much work and a little kludgy for me, but especially if I'm just using the UI, like, I don't know why I need to do that, but it's here now.
If you are a Blueprint author, this one's for you. Blueprint authors can now make sections or groups of settings collapsible in the Blueprint itself. So if you've got, if you're sharing a Blueprint and you've got some, you know, advanced settings that, you know, people generally don't need to adjust, you can actually hide them in a collapsible area, but still make them available, you know, for people to edit if they want to go under the hood. So I think that's a really good addition for Blueprints, because I think, you know, if we're trying to make Home isn't open to more people, particularly giving like these tools to people that are creating, you know, shortcuts, you know, to creating automations via the UI. Yeah, this is really cool to be able to, you know, just have a little section that's blanked out or hidden by default so that, you know, people can go in and don't have to tweak those settings. I think that's pretty nice.
All right. Grouping actions. So our friend Frank put in this feature where there's now an ability to group multiple actions together. So especially when you're doing, and this is typically when you're doing actions and automations and stuff. So what, let me take a step back here. When you build an automation, by default, everything kind of fires in a sequence, right? So if you say, if I have an automation, hey, there's a motion, let's say it's, I have motion, then turn on light one, turn on light two, turn on light three. What happens is you can go in and you can say, okay, it will go in and turn on light one, and then it will go and turn on light two, turn on light three. So it's a sequence, right? Step one, step two, step three. So, and that's default behavior. The alternate is you can add a block and say, all of these are actually going to run in parallel, right? So do one, two, and three all at the same time. What this is, and this is kind of implicit behavior, is that sequence now gives you, you just the same way you have the ability to do parallel, you now have the ability to do a sequence. So what that means is I can start nesting some of these blocks. So I can go in and say, okay, I want to run in parallel. I want to run sequence block one, and I want to run sequence block two, right? So maybe I have some conditions where I can run both of these things at once, but within those things, I have whatever restriction to say fire one, fire two, fire three, one after the other, after the other. Even if you don't want that, you can just, and you just have a bunch of like, it's complex. You can just say, hey, you know what? I'm just going to toss all of these into a building block with a sequence there. And it just lets you collapse it, right? At minimum, yeah. It gives you that. But then it also allows you to start building a little more complex automations when you're running sequential inside parallel and stuff like that too. So it's kind of cool if you need to do any advanced things. This probably won't affect a ton of people, especially if your automations are pretty simple. But yeah.
I will say I struggled to understand that when I was reading it, but you explained that like nicely. I don't think I could explain that better. So thank you.
There you go. No worries. Just, that's the one part I was paying full attention for because I was like, wait, what? During the creator's call. So there you go.
All right. Matter. So quick update around Matter. It's now got support for the fan platform, which is going to be used for things like air purifiers and room air conditioners. Don't think you can buy any of those yet. But, you know, Home isn't still trying to keep up to the spec. Keeping pushing updates for Matter happening. So yeah, it's good to see at least Home Assistant, you know, running the gauntlet with that one.
Yeah, and Matter is also getting an update, right? 1.3, which I think Home Assistant's already ahead of. So it's kind of cool to see that as this new standard comes out or as this new spec comes out, how Home Assistant's kind of on top of it. And we've talked about it before. I think when Paulus was on the episode too, there's actually vendors out there that use Home Assistant as the testing standard for their products, because Home Assistant is the only platform. One, it's free, open source, etc. But Home Assistant is also the only platform that's actually got the latest Matter spec in there, tested and vetted. So, I don't know, pretty cool. I actually really like. I don't have any Matter devices myself, but I do like. I like the fact that the implementation is so up to date that you know, it's almost the blueprint standard, right? So. All right. Disabling expiring login tokens. So we talked about this a few episodes ago. Basically, there's a cleanup mechanism now in Home Assistant where if a login token wasn't used for 90 days, it would expire and basically get cleaned up. So in your section, when you log in and look in your profile, you'll see a bunch of different tokens there. Before, you used to have to go in and click the delete button one by one by one by one. Now, after 90 days, it'll automatically say, hey, this isn't used. Let's just flush it out and kill that session. Now, what that brought was people had a lot of like, sometimes people had like, I don't know, like a summer home or a cottage or something like that. And they're like, hey, well, you know, we don't always have people that, that are occupying the space, whatever. And I don't want my, my token expiring. So what happens now is you can, on an individual token, you can actually go in and say, don't expire this token. So in 90 days, it'll clear up all of the tokens that aren't used for over 90 days, except for those ones that you've set to do that. So this is kind of like a remember me feature, but you're doing that in the profile, in the actual session itself, right? In that token. So maybe you have like a wall tablet that gets used very rarely or something like that. In like I said, like, in like a cottage or something like that, but you want that there. So now you can actually go in and keep that instead of it expiring. So.
Yeah. And I guess like, even like, not even to that level, you'd have things like, a random, like maybe you've got an automation or a random service that, needs to call your home as an API every, you know, 6 months, once every 6 months to update
something.
That token would be expired, because what wasn't used in 90 days. So, yeah, that makes complete sense that you would need to, you know, if you have yet to give the ability.
You still have the option to do long live tokens for those things, but these are typically when you're looking at like actual client sessions, right?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, I forgot about long live tokens. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be cool to see, like, maybe we could customize that 90 days, like instead of maybe, you know, maybe people want more aggressive, you know, if I'm not looking for 7 days, like shut it down, or, you know, people want to restrict to a year or something.
Maybe yeah, that so keep it tunable, basically.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that would be something to tweak in the future, but I guess 90 days is more than enough for the moment.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I'm fine with 90 at least, but...
Something that is I didn't think of until I saw this in the show notes. I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Tags, so QR codes, NFC tags. You can use those to trigger automations. You would go into an automation and you would say, you know, when this tag is scanned, you would have a tags dialog or a text page where you can set up tags. You know, I'm just going to generate a QR code for you, or it can write to an NFC tag, or you can tap an NFC tag with the Home Assistant app and it'll show up in that area. Previously, they weren't entities. There was no, apart from going into that tags interface, there was no ability to add them to your own dashboard. There was no ability to do a whole bunch of things. So now they are entities, which means you can now use them for things like scripts, templates, automations as usual. And of course, you can put them on your dashboard as an entity. I'm guessing you'd have like when it was last scanned. This was something I really wanted to play with, unfortunately. I had a few bugs with the beta with my Alamo component, so I wasn't able to test it extensively. But yeah, I'm hoping to be able to see, you know, who scanned what, because I've got a NFC tag near my garage door outside and I'm always tapping that thing, you know, to open up the garage door. So it'd be cool to have, you know, this tab was last tapped by Phil, you know, 20 minutes ago. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what data is exposed there. But yeah, really cool to see, like, yeah, just little improvements like this. Love it.
Yeah, no, and yeah, before there was this like mysterious, like pseudo kind of entity, but not really, but ish, right? Because you couldn't actually call it anywhere or see it anywhere, but it's there. Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know, kind of cool. Teslametry gets more entities. So if you have a Tesla and a subscription to Teslametry, there are now a whole bunch more entities available to you. This is a pseudo-official way of getting Tesla data into Home Assistant. So I know typically what you'd have to use is you have to use like a Hacks add-on or something like that. This is a subscription service. But I believe that the author that wrote this software actually has proper API access to Tesla's APIs. And therefore, it's like an actual, like, you know, you're not paying for somebody that just used like some ripped off API from somewhere or something like that. Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not endorsing it in any way. I haven't used this, but it does seem kind of cool. Gives you a legitimate way to use it as if you're, I guess it's like fleet management without actually doing fleet management kind of thing. Because before exactly, that was really the only options, right? You had a fleet of them.
Yeah. So it uses the Tesla Fleet API, which is currently free. But Tesla have, signaled to everyone that they are going to charge for it one day. There is a subscription. So Telemetry does charge a fee. And you can pay for a 1-month subscription or a 3-month subscription. They don't offer 12-month subscriptions because they don't know what the fleet pricing is going to be. So they're like, at this stage, we don't know what the pricing is going to be. We can't forecast, how much this is going to cost for the moment. I really like this website is that the first, you get like product plans and, I get this feature. The first feature is fully integrated home assistant integration. So this is really made for people that want to use, that want to integrate their Tesla into home assistant. You're paying for a rock solid integration there.
Yeah. And the nice thing is, again, it's actually a, proper legitimate solution, right? They are actually using official APIs, stuff like that, that's not right. Some janky thing. But again, it is, I don't know, like I'll have to see it and play with it at some point, maybe. I don't know. I know there's other solutions out there too, Tessie and stuff like that, but those are, I think those are pretty expensive. So this one seems like a much cheaper, lower cost solution while still being legit. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I might see. Or if you use it, let me know and let me know what you think about it.
There's a free trial, so
yeah. But it's cool because it's. I'm looking at their website and it's like you get access to 10 webhooks and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if it's like, hey, if you arrive at home, fire a webhook, right? So I'm like, that might be kind of neat to say, okay, let's do something based on that, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's cool. All right. Yeah. If you use Reolink, you've now got some more sensors. So you've got battery and PIR sensors are available on cameras, doorbells, whatever supports those. They should be now available in Home Assistant. Obviously, the battery being pretty important one to have.
SwitchBot, if you use SwitchBot, meter plus or outdoor meter, those are now supported as well.
For new integrations... the Things network is now in a working state again, and is a great way for you to bring in some LoRa devices. So LoRaWAN devices are pretty epically long range devices. You can get like kilometer range out of these things. That's how they measure it, right? Not like centimeters or meters, like how many kilometers you can get of these things. So I'm guessing if you're on like a rural property or if you're at a bigger state and, you've got certainly need a door sensor or a PIR sensor very far away, these is the sort of technology you want to use. So using the Things network, in that integration, you can now integrate those LoRaWAN devices into Home Assistant. I'm pretty sure it's LoRaWAN or just LoRa, whatever. I'm not sure if there's a difference there. But, certainly I'm excited to see... how easy it would be to integrate one of these devices. Because I've always wanted to get into LoRa just for that, like knowing how far these devices can go, open up a lot of possibilities.
LoRa is a pretty cool protocol, right? Again, it's used a lot especially in industrial settings where you have long range, especially when you're like dealing with farms and sensors and stuff like that on farms or on large areas, even like even mining, like a lot of those kind of different facets, right? Like so it's pretty cool. And I like the residential use, if you want to call it, of LoRa sometimes too. You you said, Phil, you got a big property, which again, living in the Toronto area, I don't. this is one of the barriers for me trying it, because I'm like, okay, well, I'll give you like 5 meters from I'm trying, right, instead of kilometers. But I want to play with it. I want to try it and I want to see, how that works. But Yeah, just having long range sensors and those kind of things too. And it is a pretty neat protocol. Again, keep in mind it's low bandwidth, so you're basically just sending the telemetry across. You're not going to be, it's not like rich data or anything like that, right? It's like you have a temperature sensor, it's going to be like, hey, it's 25, right?
Yep.
Maybe there's some humidity data on there too. It's like, hey, it's 70% or 60% or whatever that is, right? Like, great, that's it.
You might be able to get some use out of it in terms of like your mailbox, like, because I know you've got like a communal mailbox that's not right outside your front house, right? Maybe that would be a good way for you to get a notification when, you know, you've got mail in that letterbox to go down and check.
Yeah, problem is though, the mailbox is like I can see my mailbox, like I'm literally looking at my mailbox right now. So it's not far. Problem is it's a metal encased mailbox.
Nice.
As in like it is a giant I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a big metal box, and each within, and there's three boxes, and within each box there's your little box in there, right? And then there's a couple of parcel boxes underneath if you have bigger boxes or stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure like that's like, well, I'm 100% sure it's property of Canada Post. I can't like drill a hole into it or for an antenna or anything like that. Because that is almost definitely illegal and or vandalism. So I don't know what that would be, but yeah. And again, because it's encased in what feels like pretty thick metal, cause it's out there. Right. And it's subject to all types of weather conditions and whatever. So I don't know, but it's not a bad thought. But on that vein, like, you know, if you did have a really far out letterbox that you have, right, that's a good it's a good solution for that too. But keep in mind, definitely, with Laura, you kind of have to write your own protocol above it, right? So Laura is just your transport, and a lot of people do MQTT, a lot of people do a lot of that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
But Laura isn't necessarily a standardized way of communicating data.
Gotcha. Okay, that's not as easy as I was hoping for.
Yeah, it's kind of bring your own protocol kind of on top of that, right? Air gradient. So if you have an air gradient device that's new in this release, you can bring in air quality data from air gradient using local polling.
There you go. Okay, anyway, we're back with 2024.6 straight after this.
We want to give our thanks this episode to Factor. If you haven't heard of them, Factor makes no prep, no mess meals that are fresh, not frozen. Their meals are chef-crafted and dietitian-approved, and best of all, they're ready to go in 2 minutes. That really helped me, because in the last couple of months, we've been really busy with my family and I, and we've been eating out a lot, which has started to add up. Doing the math, Factor was less expensive and way healthier than eating out. Every week, you get over 35 options to pick from, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and Vegan choices, and more than 60 add-ons to keep you going all day long. Factor is a perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. If you want to try it for yourself, head to factormeals.com/homeassistant50 and use the code homeassistant50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. That's code homeassistant50 at factormeals.com/homeassistant50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
AP Systems, you can now monitor your AP Systems EZ1 microinverters. So that's a good integration to have.
Yeah. Azure Data Explorer. So you're now able to forward events from a Home Assistant into the Azure Data Explorer if you want to do any analysis. And this is a great throwback to episode 144 in November when we chatted with Ian about how he's using Azure and a lot of services in there for zero trust. So Ian, if you're listening, this might be something cool to look into, where you can now directly go in and play with.
I can see like Ian doing some crazy things, like, you know, like pushing all the events in there and then getting, you know, like machine learning to say, all right, this is his habits. On a Monday, he's usually not up at this time. Something's off. I'm going to raise the security profile of the house a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah. Set the phasers just done.
Yeah, exactly. Set them to kill, right? Like, let's
that's work. Right.
All right. Institute of Meteorology and Water Management, so IMGW, is a national research institute which is providing information about rivers and water reservoirs in Poland. So I'm guessing, you know, you can, I know in Australia we are very, you know, drought affected country. So, you know, when we have, you know, our El Nino seasons and all that, we have our water reservoirs go down, and, you know, then we might get water restrictions, you know, can't water your gardens on, you know, odd and even number of days and all that sort of stuff. So I'm assuming this would be similar, right? Being able to see it at a national level, all right, this is how much water the country has, we need to conserve more water or whatever. So if that's how this integration works, then that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Only if you're in Poland, though.
Yes.
So B Draco's back with more optimizations. And thank you, B Draco. So this brings in the Intelligent Storage Acceleration Library, or ISAL, that's used for accelerating the Home Assistant front end. You don't need to do anything. It's just automatically enabled. Basically, it'll go in and say, hey, you know, if there's whatever's going on, it can go in and bring that acceleration in. Yeah, which is, again, super cool. A lot of these, like, random optimizations and stuff that B-Draco brings in are so cool. And it's unfortunate because everything is behind the scenes, so he gets no, like, flashy credit for it or anything like that. So I just wanted to give him a shout-out. Thank you for all your hard work and ton of, like, database optimizations that happen. And, all, like, kind of throughout, there's a ton of work that goes in there. And I know it's definitely not something I have the skill set for, and I think it's a pretty niche skill set. So thank you for contributing that skill set to Home Assistant 2. So.
All right. Monzo, which is a UK-based bank. You can now integrate your Monzo bank account into Home Assistant, giving you insights into your account balance. And I think we've, you know, joked about this previously, right? Like, you know, having banks or, you know, cryptocurrency wallets, you know, integrated with Home Assistant. Yeah. I don't know what sort of automations you would do. Maybe you would have, you know, preventing you from ordering Uber Eats if your bank balance is a certain level. I'm not sure, you know, what color the lights are. I'm not sure what you would do with such an integration. But, you know, I guess now having that data in Home Assistant, you can then push it off to Grafana or Azure or wherever you need to go. If you want to do some long-term trend analysis, that's, yeah, only thing I could think of.
Kill all the lights if your bank balance is below X amount, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Turn off the server, cancel the ChatGPT's integration.
That's right.
Save some tokens.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a good use for it. You know, if you, that's something you need, then.
I'm more of a, if it can be integrated, let's integrate it. All right.
Yeah. Give me the option not to integrate it.
Exactly.
All right. Talk about some backward incompatible changes, Phil.
Yeah.
File integration. So the notify services for the file integrations now require that the file path is an allowed path, right? So you should make sure that the access file is in the allowed list __external_DIRS lists to ensure your automations keep working. So if you do have that going, make sure if your automation stops working and it's related to a file, then.
Yeah. I've got some audio files to play, like to sing Happy Birthday. And I don't even know. Like, yeah, I guess I'm going to have to check this. Like, this is a good shout out. Like, this is a good reminder that I need to. I don't even know what allow list external is, right? Like, I better check that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a common one for a lot of people, and you know, as I'm reading this, obviously, like, I was on the call on Wednesday and whatever, like the creator's call and stuff, and I'd updated my Home Assistant, and naturally I didn't clue in until I'm literally reading this again. A common one that a lot of people use is doorbell. You go ding dong, it takes a snapshot and sends it across, right? So my snapshot stopped working, and this makes sense as to why. So I'm going to try and fix that today.
There you go. What lock are you using? Are you using the ring lock still?
So the doorbell or?
The doorbell, sorry, yeah.
I'm using the Reolink now. My ring was giving me crappy results, and I didn't want to pay for more subscriptions.
Yep.
So I asked to that device and got a Reolink doorbell. Yeah, pretty happy with it so far.
Sorry, personal questions. Sorry, just going to derail this for a second. Battery or POE?
Non-POE. It's plugged into the the doorbell transformer.
Yeah, I need a battery one. Like, I same thing, right? Like, subscriptions, you're paying what, like, I think it's up to $60 a year now for a ring. I can justify, the subscription cost alone, right? If I just ditch that one camera, getting a Reolink, it would pay itself off in a couple of years.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had issues where it wasn't capturing everything always, right? So,
right.
I think I talked about this in the podcast in the past, where, you know, my wife and I were traveling and we had a package that was delivered. And we had instructed one of our neighbors to say, just, hey, you know, if you see the package, just grab it kind of thing.
Yep.
And she had, but the ring captured package. And then the very next frame is no package.
No.
And I'm like, something happened in the middle here. So I had to check my driveway camera. And I saw our neighbor walk up and grab it, which I'm like, okay, it's fine. You know, we asked you to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the bigger issue was the ring didn't capture her coming up to the front door, grabbing the package and leaving.
Yeah.
Right? So that was, I had a bit of an issue with that. And that had happened several times. And I don't know if it's because, you know, maybe it was just too cold or what it was, but I had had that happen in the summer as well. And I think for me, that was, I was like, okay, that's when I'm kind of done with that. Cause you're not, you're now not serving the purpose I paid for you for.
Exactly.
And on top of that, I just don't want another subscription. So
yeah, 100%. All right. Another backward incompatible change, MQTT locks. They have support for the open and opening state. So that's just been added. When a lock is used in the optimistic mode, the lock's status will become open instead of unlocked. So when an MQTT lock is opened, it will move to an open state instead of unlocked when in optimistic mode. So that's, cool to see that the open and opening state are added. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little heads up there if you're using an MQTT lock.
So MQTT as a whole. So if you use the alarm control panel, climate, cover, device tracker, lock, select, valve, and water heater items, basically it's been made a little more predictable if your state is set to none. So in the past, a none was basically considered invalid and it was basically just ignored.
Yep.
Now a none is basically equivalent to unknown. And an empty payload is ignored. So if you're using any of those MQTT pieces, just keep that in mind and in case you do get a none or anything like that.
I know I just mentioned before, I had issues with my Alamo thing. So here's a funny one for you, Rohan. So I upgraded to the beta, was fine and plugging along nicely. And then I noticed that a couple of my, so I have various zones in my, I've used a custom kind of Alamo for alarm control panels. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that a couple of my zones were triggered. I was like, oh, they shouldn't be triggered. I've got my automations pretty down pat, right? That, you know, they were going to armed night or disarmed or whatever, but they were triggered. I'm like, oh, I'll just, that's fine. I had a tablet on the wall. So I was just like, I'll just click disarm, punched in the code to disarm the alarm panel, which would then re-enable the automations in that zone, only for there to be an error to say, oh, you're missing an X amount of requirements. This function call cannot disarm alarm panel. So for a couple of days when I was running the beta, my house could go from between armed states, but once it was triggered, I couldn't disarm it. I had to eventually downgrade back to 2024.5 to be able to disarm the alarm and get the house to move out of night mode. Beta issues, I'm sure by the time 2024.6 comes out, I can see there's a pull request already for the Alarmo component to address it. So yeah, I just thought that was a random quirk, you know, like everything was fine, you know. Usually like when I upgrade to a beta, if something's not going to work, I will notice it immediately, right? You know, it'd be a Z-Wave issue or something's incompatible. But no, this one was, didn't notice it until the next morning. Like, why are the lights so dark? And then I look and the house still thinks it's in armed night mode. I'm like, oh, I'll just disarm it. Nope, can't disarm it. Okay, cool.
And this is a fun when you don't read the manual to do upgrades. I was subject to that, not home system related, but just some of my other stuff where I run a bunch of Docker containers for various services.
Yep.
And I use Traffic as a front end reverse proxy behind all of that. Mm-hmm. And Traffic had an update to, I don't know, version 3.0 or something like that. Naturally, I didn't even look, so I had no idea. Upgraded it, and now all of a sudden nothing works, and my DNS at home and stuff like that is behind Traffic as well. So now I can't access anything, and I was like, what the hell is going on? So I'm going through and like trying to debug things. My DNS is like, I'm fine, and I was like, but you're not.
No.
And it turns out Traffic wasn't coming up after I upgraded it, and I was like, oh my god. It's like, so I downgraded it, same thing that you did, right? Downgraded it, and I was like, I mean, I'm at the point where I'm like, I saw where the config fixes, and I was like, that's a problem for later. I'll just do it later.
Exactly.
Just always read the manual before you upgrade, which, again, I know I'm going to find myself in this situation again, but this is me telling future Rohan that that's what I should do.
That's it. All right. Another backward incompatible change, Open Weather Map. So they've released a new API version. So version 2.5 is going to be closed in June 2024, so this month. All Open Weather Map integrations must be migrated to version 3 to avoid service interruption. So if you're using, you know, Open Weather Map in your Home Assistant instance, before the migration, you must have an active subscription. And you must be aware that subscription activation can take up to a couple of hours. So it's not like go into Home Assistant, hit migrate, and I think it's going to work immediately. There is a couple of hours delay for those activations to happen. After your subscription has been activated, you can then migrate your integrations to V3 via repair in Home Assistant or manually via the integration configuration menu in Home Assistant. There is a free tier of Open Weather Map. They have, I think it's 1,000 calls per day. So if you are using this in Home Assistant, consider setting the limit on the Open Weather Map website to stay under the threshold so you don't get a cost to using that. Yeah. Appreciate that there is a free tier. So thank you, Open Weather Map, for that.
Yeah, totally agreed. Z-Wave. So again, as usual, there's a version bump. So when you upgrade your Home Assistant, upgrade your Z-Wave.js, if you're using that, you need to use version 1.35.0 or higher. I won't go into the specifics, but basically, yeah, same as usual. If you've got it, you've done it before, then keep doing it.
So that's 2024.6. Rohan, I think this has been the AI episode essentially, right? Like we've got the big additions to Home Assistant now with LLMs being able to control entities in Home Assistant. Some other random related stuff, and I've been seeing this in my Google Discover feed for ages, hinting at Amazon's going to add a premium fee to their little voice assistant. It's a subscription fee. They're trying to charge money for it. I'm like, they're not going to do that. Anyway, it looks like they are potentially going to add a subscription fee for the little lady in there to get an AI enhancement. So essentially, you know, everything's getting more AI, right? I know I use the Amazon Echo for my voice assistant. I believe you do as well. Just wanted to know, what are your thoughts on this? Is this, you know, are you willing to pay a monthly fee for your little voice assistant in the Amazon Echo to get smarter?
No.
There you go.
It's not at all. I mean, it's pretty dumb as is, and I don't think AI is also there just yet where I'm willing to pay for that. And let me clarify that a little bit. Where I think I would be, and I don't today, but I think I would be willing to pay for OpenAI or something similar. Yeah. Because it offers me a little more where I can, you know, there's a lot more flexibility there. Like, I'm not going to go and ask my Amazon Echo, hey, help me code this thing in Python.
Mm.
Right. So I'm actually not getting any value. The only value I'm getting here is, you know, it gets me a little more context to things or a little more, you know, it comes up with stuff, which again, even if you ever use ChatGPT or any of the first thing it says is like, hey, careful, this might not be accurate. So now I'm like, okay, you're not helping me do daily tasks like that. Plus, I don't want to pay for it. Plus, it's this whole like, there's multiple levels of reasons why I don't want to pay for it. I've also heard that they might be charging if to deliver an ad-free experience. Now, I don't know. And I don't know if that's one and the same, if that comes with this AI subscription or what.
Yeah.
If it's something reasonable, like if it's like $1 a month, maybe. But I guarantee you it's not, because there's a lot of horsepower that goes into this and stuff like that, right? So I get why it wouldn't be, but
I'd be interested to know.
I just don't think I need that function.
I'd be interested to know what those ads are, because are they saying that they will give you like an Amazon Echo ad-free experience in terms of like, she won't pester you like, oh, by the way, you should buy, you know, this product? Because if my Amazon Echo starts doing that, it's going in the bin. Right. I already, like, I have the Echo shows and I've tried to disable so many of the pictures that come up, you know, advertising this or advertising that. Yeah. So if it starts, you know, talking about products in that way as a billboard, then no, it's going out. I know. Yeah, same. And this is coming off the back, like now they want to charge a premium Amazon Echo voice assistant. I'm really trying not to say her name. So, you know, if I sound a bit weird saying Amazon Echo voice assistant, that's why I don't want to trigger everyone's devices that's listening to this. What I find interesting though is at the same time, they've also just announced, especially down here in Australia, that they are going to start introducing ads to Prime Video. And I think they already do that in Canada from what I've been reading on Reddit, Rohan, you know, for sure. But yeah, essentially Prime Video, even if you're a Prime member, will have ads when you're watching Prime Video. Or if you want the ad-free experience, you've got to now, you know, upgrade for $3 a month. And I'm like, well, I'm already paying you a yearly subscription fee. Yes, I get a whole bunch of, you know, Prime benefits already, but now don't try and nickel and dime me by offering me an ad-free experience for $3 here and and premium Amazon Echo voices and over here for another $3, you know, like... Yeah.
It's, I feel like everybody is moving to that model. Netflix is doing the same, except they have a lower priced model, right? Yep. I think how Prime Video looks at it is, hey, you're actually just getting this for free as a benefit of being a Prime member.
Yep.
But if you want an upgraded experience, you can get that, which fine, whatever. I think the Amazon Echo part annoys me. I don't know that I need AI in that, right? Would it be cool? Sure, because I can be like, hey, give me a recipe of for how to make, I don't know, pancakes, right? Like, okay, cool. And then it'll say, okay, take the batter, take some eggs, take some milk, whatever, like mix them all together, whatever. That might be cool, but do I want to pay for that? I don't know.
And how many times do we like use that device for those things, right? Like, you're most likely Googling a recipe for pancakes on your phone. Listen, read the instructions.
Almost 100% of mine are turn these lights on, turn those lights off. Like maybe it's, hey, what's the weather today? Right. Yeah. That's probably the only non-Home Assistant command that I use for those on my Echoes, right? And in all honesty, at that point, if I wanted that functionality, I think what I might do is, again, if I've been considering an OpenAI account. Mm. So at that point, I say, okay, great. I get an OpenAI account and I'll hook that up to like a Nabucasa, like a voice, what's it called? Like Home Assistant voice.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you know what? Here's my Atom Echo or here's my whatever, or even the Anju voice devices.
Mm.
Here's that. And you are my chat interface to OpenAI or Google Gemini or whatever, right? Or maybe even Amazon's version if I care that much, right? Like, because at that point I can do more with it. If it's on the Echo, I'm still restricted to what the Echo can do.
Yes. And there's probably not going to be an API, right? Like, we're not going to be able to then call it, you know, from Home Assistant and integrate it that way and all that as well, right?
I assume not, right? And specifically to the Echo, I assume not. Again, will they do things like somehow modify Matter to say, hey, you know, I can bring in this thing? I don't know. Probably not. I'll have to consider it when it comes out, I think is what it would come down to. But at this point, I don't know. I don't know that I personally would get a ton of value out of it.
Yeah. I think we're on the same
page. How do you feel about it? What's your...
Are
you
exactly the same? Yeah. Like, I don't think I'd pay for it. I mean, it just... It reminds me, like, I remember when the Amazon Echo first came out, like this, you know, and this voice system first came out, like it was... It kicked off, you know, like Google Home had to come out because of it, right? Like, we wouldn't have Google Home if we didn't have the Amazon Echo and this lady in there. And I think Siri as well, we wouldn't have Siri. Maybe Siri came beforehand, but in my mind, she was the first, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, she just became like the standard, right? Like, there's so many, you know, things like there's jokes in TV shows about, you know, this device just all of a sudden existing, right? And changing the world. And it's just, I don't know, now to pay extra to get what we were, now we have to pay more to get what we were promised. Like, the marketing spiel back then was, right, this assistant is going to be able to help you with cooking and, you know, be really smart. And now we've realized, oh, it's just a pre-trained voice assist, like, to, like, yes, it was for the time, it did a lot of fancy stuff, but now we are in the age of AI and of these, you know, large language models and predictive text and all that, and we're now seeing, oh, actually these are things that the marketing was telling us, you know, 10 years ago, now we're actually here, the technology is actually here, but it's so expensive you're gonna have to pay extra to get it. For me, it's a bit sad. I would rather I just... Not sad. Like, I don't, it's just, I don't, just, I feel like, oh, this is the original, this is the OG assistant, right? And now it's sort of diminished her a little bit to say, you have to pay extra to get AI added to her. And I'm like, oh, I thought you were already pretty smart as is.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing for what I use it for is it's good enough.
Hmm.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And she does things like, and like the voice recognition and, you know, setting timers and reminders, like she's great at all of that. Right. But then you try and go beyond that, which, you know, we thought we were able to, it doesn't really exist. Now with those LLMs, we can go beyond that, but you have to pay for it. And
Exactly.
I think if I was going to pay for an AI subscription, it would be either Gemini, where I can, you know, because I'm already paying Google on subscriptions, right? Although Gemini is rather expensive, OpenAI.
Exactly. And with that OpenAI subscription, now I can, like I said, or Gemini, I can start asking it coding questions. I can start asking it,
exactly,
hey, generate me this image or whatever, right? Yep. Like there's... Yep. There's some piece in there at least that I can use beyond the Echo And I think that's the problem. So I'd want to see what the prices end up being like. Again, if it's like 50 cents or a buck a month, fine. Maybe I'll think about it. What I'd love is if they say, okay, you know what? You are a Prime member, so you automatically get this, right? Like I do have Amazon
that would
Prime.
Be right. Yeah.
I'd be okay with that, right? And again, at that point, I already do pay for the subscription. I pay for whatever Prime costs, 80 bucks or whatever a month. I don't remember what it is now, but a year.
Yeah.
And fine, right, at that point. But if I actually have to spend more money out of my pocket than I already do, I don't know. It'd be a hard sell, at least at this point, for what I get.
And I'd hate for them to diminish the current product to force you to upsell to get that AI enhancement, right? Like I'd hate, you know, like things start getting behind paywalls or, as you said, like an ad-free version of the Amazon Echo Voice Assistant Lady. Like, no, thank you.
There's already been, and I mean, the internet's been pretty hard on, especially Amazon, but a little bit on Google too, of pulling features back, right?
Like,
And there was actually, like, I forget who we were talking about this with, but Home Assistant Voice is getting such a jump forward just because all of these guys are getting such a jump backwards.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, if the line is here, they're now moved the line down and Home Assistant is just that much closer to hitting that line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and you know, I don't see Mike and the voice team there slowing down at all on the Home Assistant side. And I guess maybe some of that pullback is for this AI functionality, right? And what sucks is, you know, Amazon might be setting a precedent here and saying, and then now Google goes in and says, hey, we're going to do that too. And then, you know, whatever, right? Apple might go in and say, okay, you know, we are going to do that too with your HomePods or whatever you might have, right? So hopefully that doesn't become the norm.
Hopefully it doesn't happen. Anyway, Rohan, 2024.6 is here. Thank you very much for breaking it down with me again.
Perfect.
Cheers. See you next month. Cheers.
See you next month.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.